For members only, Golf Smarter number 403, published on September 24, 2013, is brought to you by the all-new GolfSmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
While we're young, shut up with Kyle Christensen.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to Golf Smarter for members only, Kyle.
Hi, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on. I know that you work for the big boys, but you, I found you on the travelgolf.com blog, and you wrote a piece that was singing to me because I'd been complaining about the commercial that the USGA did on While We're Still Young. I found it to be condescending.
And I did as well.
Thank you. I'm glad I wasn't alone on this, because it's like, really, is that your attitude? Come on.
To quote a character from a movie, as much as I love the movie and the character, to kind of use that as your tie-in to the program, and then to not really make any obvious reference to it. So if you hadn't happened to have seen the movie, it just kind of seemed like a rude thing to say to people.
Right. Oh, you're talking about Caddyshack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The While We're Young line comes from Caddyshack.
Rodney Dangerfield, who's not even a golfer.
No, exactly. He's not a golfer, and he's rubbing golfers the wrong way. And in the movie, those golfers deserve to be rubbed the wrong way for the most part. Nevertheless, it wasn't delivered in the movie as a kind of a polite way to move play along. It was a kind of a snarky, smart alecky way to move play along.
Exactly right. Okay, here's what Rodney Dangerfield sounded like in the movie.
Let's go while we're young.
You mind, sir? Trying to tee off.
And now here's what they're making Arnold Palmer say to average golfers.
While we're young.
And of course, you know, we're trying to teach our kids, and this is the attitude they want kids to show. This is what they have on the commercial with a little kid.
While we're young?
Yeah, right. Now, if that were my kid, and he spoke to somebody like that in front of me on a golf course, not only would he be not allowed to play anymore, but he may be grounded for a while. And then Arnold Palmer, to have him be rude to somebody just seems so out of character.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And a couple of the other commercials, the people who are in question, the slow players in question, Tiger Woods and Clint Eastwood, didn't really seem to speed up. Tiger laughed and said,
no respect,
and went back to kind of doing his miniature golf putting, whatever. And Clint Eastwood just looked angry.
Which he always does anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I didn't see that either one of them actually sped up their play.
Right, right. So is this the thing that the USGA needs to do to try to get more people to play, or are they just trying to keep the ones that they have? What do you think their motivation when they all sat around going, yes, we did it? I mean, like, you just know that somebody had to approve this, and it was all probably a committee.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Who are they trying to aim this for? Because, I mean, if I were a beginning golfer and was already intimidated by the cost and the equipment and the fact that I you know, mishit a lot of shots and all of those things. Yeah. Right. You know, would I want to be out there with the chance of, you know, someone saying, hey, while we're young, that would seem to be even more intimidating.
Right.
Although I guess maybe you think, well, you know, even good golfers have people yelling at them to speed up. I don't know. It seems to me to be more pressure. I'm not sure.
Right. And that's all you need on the golf course is more pressure.
Yeah. Right.
Especially if you're, you know, not, you're new to the game. Which is, I would think that the USGA's goal, although I'm never quite sure if their goal is to, you know, get more people out there.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I some sort of, assurance. If they were going for kind of new golfers, beginning golfers, getting people to not be intimidated by going out and playing in front of other people, something like, everybody hits bad shots, and, you know, a montage of bad tour shots or something like that. Don't worry about it. you know, if you're going to hit them bad, at least hit them fast. Just go pick up your ball and, mm-hmm. and don't get bent out of shape about it. Something with that take-home message would seem to me to be more effective for especially beginning golfers, but maybe every golfer. I know when I hit a lousy shot, I mean, yeah, you know what? Drop another one, hit, just move on.
Right. I mean, everybody does it. I mean, listen, on the tour, if they didn't have 10,000 people standing around or getting conked in the head by balls that are going, these guys would spend all day looking for the ball, too.
Yeah. You know, my friends and I who play each week, we often think to ourselves, boy, if these fairway were lined with fairways were lined with people, we would know where our ball was. It probably would have bounced off somebody, or else we'd have a four caddy out there, a marshal with a little flag to put it down for us.
Oh, now you're really going to get me started, because I have a huge issue with marshals who just have the cojones to come up to you and say, can you pick up the pace, please? It's
right.
Like, you know, and it just happened to me recently. And he said, can you pick up the pace? I said, by the way, that drive that I just hit wide that's now in the junk, did you see it? He went, what?
No,
it's
I
like,
didn't see it.
Well, dude, I hit it right over your head. And isn't your job to, if you're in the fairway, to watch the guys hit it and then throw down your hat or a flag so I don't have to spend 5 minutes looking at it, and you're coming here to tell me to hurry up?
Right, right.
Give me a break.
Exactly. You know, and some courses are designed in that way. Anyway, I like the classic courses in Ireland and Scotland with blind shots and so forth, but largely you're playing those courses with a four caddy or a caddy who kind of knows where the ball's going to go. But not always. But there are a lot of courses in the U.S. that are built with these blind shots. There was a course in Michigan that in a town nearby where I used to live, the 18th hole was the approach was a blind shot over a hazard to a green surrounded by hazard. And it was you know, a challenging shot, but fortunately it was the last hole of the round, because people would get stacked up on that tee two and three groups back, because people would hit shots and then be out in the middle of the fairway and hit a shot and go, I don't know, is that lost? I don't know, I better hit a provisional. Oh, gee, is that lost? I don't know, I better. And then they'd go and sit and walk around the green for 10 minutes trying to figure out whose ball was whose and where it might have gone in. And what they needed was here's where a ball went, here's another one over here.
Then if you just, okay, so now you're out there and you're playing and you're not playing as fast as you could, and now Arnold Palmer or Tiger Woods or Clint Eastwood comes up to you and tells you to hurry up.
Right.
Oh,
right.
That's going to help.
Well, we're young. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I guess there's, you know, so if you're, you know, flirting with the drink cart girl or taking an inordinate number of practice swings, I mean, I can see that if people are acting almost cartoonishly slow like they are in the commercials. But as you and I know, it's rarely the case on the course that someone's being cartoonishly slow. I mean, it's just the little things here and there that kind of accrue over the course of a round. You know, one extra practice swing or walking around on the tee trying to find the cigarette or cigar they just dropped on the grass. Or or as I pointed out in the piece, you know, bad cart driving, where people don't even realize they're they go and they park next to their playing partner who gets out and takes the practice swings and hits and then gets back in the cart. And then they drive the cart, you know, 20 yards away to get out and do it all over again, as opposed to dropping someone off at their ball, driving while the other person hits and then the other person walking over. And I mean, because if you say, while we're young to that, you go, what, we're playing. Well,
right.
You're just not doing it as efficiently as you could. It's not that you're being, doing a Chinese fire drill in the middle of the fairway each time.
Right. I'm not so sure carts speed up the pace of play.
No, I don't think they do either.
Especially if you have two people in a cart.
Yeah. You know, if you've got two people in a cart, it's unless the course is just impossible to walk, I think generally.
Right.
And they're very skilled cart drivers. They know each other well, and they do it the right way. I don't really think it speeds things up at all, no.
And, oh, my gosh, now you're going to have cart path only days. Oh, that's really going to slow things down.
That's just awful.
Awful.
It's just awful, yeah. Courses that are either badly irrigated or you happen to have some bad weather, which you can't do much about. But there are some courses who are almost always cart path only for one reason or another, and it's just brutal.
It really is. I had a marshal come up to me a couple weeks ago and said, you know, can you guys, you're a hole and a half behind. Can you please? And within a hole and a half, we were waiting at a par three.
You know,
and it was like, we didn't do anything different. And the guy and marshal came back three holes later and said, I promise I won't see you on the back nine. I promise I won't. And it's like, yeah, go look for lost balls.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you want to pick up the pace of play, putt out. Don't just because you're away after your second putt, just keep going, you know, just putt out. Everyone doesn't have to go through their whole routine with after every single putt. That's going to be a quick way to do it.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, play games where it doesn't matter if you give people, so they've got a foot left or whatever, just give them the putt. I know that's not within the rules of golf, but play the game where everything within the grip of your putter is good or whatever. And don't put the score in for a handicap if you're that worried about it. But
another pet peeve of mine, if someone says, okay, that's good, pick it up. Don't putt it in.
Right.
Don't pick it up. Pick up the ball. Because if you do putt it and miss, I'm sorry, the gimme's gone. Forget it. I asked you to pick it up. You didn't, and you missed. You're going to take that stroke.
Right. Yeah. You said it's been given to you. You try to putt it, and you miss. You go, and then you pick it up. You try to hit it back in. It's like, you know, it was given to you. Let's move along. That's very slow. And another thing that I neglected to mention in the piece was, as we just said, walking is just as fast as driving in a cart if you're, you know, if the course is set up the right way. And I like to use a push cart. And in places like Australia and New Zealand, they encourage you to roll your carts on the green.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can think about it. My cart, even laden with clubs, isn't nearly as heavy as I am. And it also doesn't have cleats on its wheels or anything like that. So I would cause far more damage to the green than rolling a three or four wheeled cart on the green. So in Australia and New Zealand, that actually helps roll the greens flat. So they just roll the carts. It's actually good. It doesn't hurt the grass any, as far as I can tell. And I don't know how many times. And I mean, I'm a devoted walker, and still I get done putting out and realize I've left my cart on the wrong side of the hole because that's where my ball, where I was chipping from. And, you know, I got to run back and get it and then run around the entire giant green. If I could just roll my cart across the green, I'd be off there a lot faster. So.
Yeah, you probably would. And in your article, and I'll post this article up on our blog too.
Sure.
You have 12 ideas that you come up with on how we can speed up pace of play. And I love going through that. I don't know if you've ever played over, I'm sure you have, at the Palms down in La Quinta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they have a sheet on how to do, you know, that everybody's required to acknowledge, you know, for their members. And that's why they have the average round is like 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Right.
You know, also, they're all much better players, and it's private.
Right.
There is that. But still, you know, they've got these rules, and I just think they're so great. But you came up with some great stuff that I thought was hilarious, and I would love to go over a couple of them.
Sure.
And I'm going to throw them out to you. Do you remember them?
Yeah, I've actually got them here in front of me.
Okay,
too.
Good. Let's go to number two, though, because we already talked about learn how to drive a cart.
Okay.
But number two, here's a call to action, and it's to the golf course operators.
Right.
Go ahead. I think this is a great idea.
Okay, so should I just read it?
Yeah, well, talk to me about it.
All right, I suggested that, and this is something that I've ever since, I mean, I tend to hit the ball straighter now, although some days my playing partners will attest to the fact that it's anything but straight. But especially when I started out playing, the out of bounds terrified me. It still kind of does, but it really used to terrify me. And this idea of, you know, having to sit there and pound balls off the tee one after another until I got one between the out of bounds stakes, or go back if you found it out of bounds, go back and try to hit one again is ridiculous. Now, I know very few people actually do that unless it's a tournament situation, or at least the people I play with. But I think that all out of bounds should be changed to lateral hazards. rather than white stakes. Just paint them to red and tell everybody, if you go over there, just drop the ball as close as it came in with a one-stroke penalty and just keep going. Don't look for the balls and don't try to hit them out of the hazard or people's yards or wherever they're at. And if you're seen doing that, then you'll be asked to leave immediately. None of this, oh, don't go in their yard. And it's just, no, don't go in the yard. And if we see you over there, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And just, and if possible, if you can get a deal with an equipment company, give everybody a sleeve of balls when you start out that says, keep up the pace, printed right on the ball. And maybe they won't worry so much about, you know, leaving one behind. And they won't.
Yeah, you know, see, it's.
And fuss over losing a dollar ball in someone's yard.
And then there are those people who play with Pro V1s that shouldn't be.
Right.
So they really freak out about losing a $4 golf ball.
Right, right.
Come on. I have friends that will just, you know, if they don't like the shot, you know, they'll just pull a ball out of their pocket and drop it. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that?
And, you know, a late evening round and there's nobody behind you and you're out for a practice round. Yeah, I've known to do that as well. But, man, not on a crowded course. Not when there's anybody around. That's for sure.
It's embarrassing. But yeah. I do like the idea. Just go stroke and distance. Don't drop another ball. And always my number one rule in my golf life, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just go to where it went out and play it like a one-stroke hazard. Don't worry about going back to the tee or, you know, pounding. Or the same, you know, the same actually goes for, you know, water hazards. You hit it in one side of the water hazard. Boy, you know what? You drop one on this side or the other side. How many are you going to hit into the water before you go, you know what? Let me just go around to the other side and hit. You know, it seems to me that unless you're playing for money with strangers, really, who cares where you hit the next one from? Go around the other side, drop it. More courses should have drop zones, especially on par threes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're hitting over a hazard, and they should put a sign right up in the tee boxes, drop zone on the other side of hazard. Please use if necessary.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I've been at courses where you hit one, it goes in the hazard, and you go, oh, crud. And the person you're playing with drops one. I better hit another one. I better hit another one. Then you get around the hazard and you're not familiar with the place and you go, oh, there was a drop zone over here. Oh, oh, that would have been nice to know.
And of course, everyone should agree to the rules before you play.
Right.
Let's just all agree right now. We'll do this, this, and this. And,
exactly.
You know, no, just stroke and distance on everything that goes out. Don't spend a lot of time looking for balls. As a matter of fact, spend more time cleaning the greens and fixing ball marks than looking for balls. Be a good golf citizen, not a selfish one.
Help with the ball and suggested was, I mean, if you like this happened yesterday with my group, we're looking for, no, 2 days ago, we were looking for a ball and we all saw where the guy's ball landed. But the rough was kind of grown up. We were having a dry spell here in the Midwest, so they're not mowing stuff very much because there's just no water. And we all saw it land. Four of us couldn't find it. We said, you know what? We all saw it land here. We know it's not. It's under a leaf somewhere, clearly, or in a hole or something. Just drop a ball. Don't take a penalty. Just hit.
Thank you.
We all saw it land here. Who cares?
And again, that's the part where you have to agree upon it before you start your round. But then you get into these, you get into playing with these people who are the rules freaks.
Right.
And it's like, no, this isn't the way a game is supposed to be played. Well, it's like you're making up your own rules on various things and your gimmies and things like that. So why do you have to be so crazy about these rules? And which leads me to a question that I love to ask a lot of people. Do you think bifurcation is a value? Do you think there should be a set of rules for the tour and for everybody else?
Oh, man, you know, that's a good question. Well, in some sense, there is
You're right there. Come on, say there is.
There is. I mean, so when you enter your handicap in any USGA system, there's an option there. Was it a tournament score or a non-tournament score?
Right.
Which suggests to me that there's a difference between playing in a tournament and not playing in a tournament. And that suggests that the tournament scores, you don't take so equitable stroke control, scores. So you don't, you know, if your handicap's at 10, in a tournament, you put in your scorecard, whatever you score on a hole. Whereas if it's a regular round, you don't go above 3 over par or something like that. So that you don't jack up your handicap.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there should be rules. And, of course, we all do, as you said, there is a bifurcation of a sort. I mean, for a scramble, for example, is not within the rules of golf. You know, everybody goes out and plays scrambles.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so. and that's not tournament play.
No, that's not tournament play, and that's, I mean, it's a scramble. What the heck's a scramble? Well, I have no idea. It's not in the rules of golf. let's play by the rules. Well, then everything you're doing with terms of rule, playing a scramble or a shamble or any other sort of format besides match and stroke play or some small variations on those is not in the rules of golf.
Yeah. I'm going to let you do number three on your own. I'm not even going to participate in this, but I couldn't agree with you more. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, just marking the yardages of the course is clearly consistently and all over the place, or else give a GPS in every card if people are using cards. Because I don't know how many times I've been on a new course and people are, you know, they look like they've been hit in the head by something heavy and they're wandering around out in the fairway, lost and discombobulated, trying to find a yardage marker. Oh, that takes forever.
Yeah, and then stepping them out. That's why I love GPS. I love carrying a GPS. And recently I've been starting to use the Bushnell Hybrid that not only is a GPS, but it is the rangefinder as well. So you get mm-hmm. exact distance where the flag is, but it also tells you front, middle, and back. And that gives you more valuable information.
Yep. And as long as those are in a spot where you can get to them real fast, mm-hmm. Because I don't like playing with people who've got those, and then they sit on every hole, they put it away in a pocket, and then they get to their ball again, have to dig it out, turn it on. You know, by that time, I've got a club out, and I've made my practice swing, and I'm ready to hit. I mean, it looks like about 170 yards. Let me give it a try. But if you're good with it, then they're excellent. Yeah, they're absolutely wonderful things.
Yeah, no question about it. Which one did I want to do here? Number seven. That was a bold statement that you made.
Oh, I know. You know, as I was reading through these, I thought to myself that a lot of people wouldn't agree with that because simply it says quit gambling on golf.
Now, wow.
Yeah, I know. And that's the whole reason a lot of people like to play. I'm not a big gambler. Even the moneyless kind of points game that we play on the weekends to see who wins, I kind of don't care about so much, but everyone I play with does.
Yep.
You can always tell the group in front of you if they're playing for anything, because they're the ones that are doing exactly as we said earlier. They're putting out, you know, they're marking their ball 8 inches away and, you know, stepping back and going through the whole routine again. And you think, oh, geez, they've got money on it. This is going to take forever.
And the other thing you notice is that there's one guy who's always a lot slower getting off the green because he's got to mark not only the scores, but he's got to mark all the points.
Exactly. And he's standing on the green with the scorecard.
Yeah.
You know, adding things up and marking things down, and you think, you know what, do that on the next tee or as you're walking, get off the green.
Right. I think just hit, and if you hit the guy, he won't be young for long, right? He's just like, hey, killed you? I'm sorry, you were in the way. You shouldn't have been standing there.
Yeah. As I said in the piece, I mean, I've been tempted a couple of times as people are sitting there putting out. I've been tempted to yell from the tee, I'll give you all $5 if you'll just move. Just go. You all win in this hole.
Exactly. Now, number eight, it's so interesting to me. You're talking about choosing the right tees to match your game.
Yeah.
And I am blown away. Well, let me ask you this before I get to that. How do you select which is the correct tee for you, or you think people should select the correct tee?
Right. So I've got an ongoing argument with a friend of mine who thinks that you choose tees simply by yardage alone. Right. So
you and I have that same argument then.
Yeah. So he's like a mid to high teen handicap. Doesn't hit the ball super far, but far enough. So one of our local courses, I think from the tips, is like 6,700 yards. And he says, oh, that's not too long for me, or 66, something like that. I should play the courses that was meant to be played. And I think, well, it doesn't matter how far you hit the ball. It's more than that. That's why there are slope and course ratings.
Right. And is that what you use? You use the slope and rating?
Yeah. So generally, I use the slope and rating. You know, if you know, I'm about a, at present about a 13, 12, 13 handicap, and I look in the, and a lot of scorecards will say if you're a handicap in this range, we suggest these tee. If it's, and if it's a course I'm not familiar with, for the most part, I go, you know what, I'll take your word for that. Mm-hmm. If it's a course that is kind of well known for having a lot of hazards, or I'm not playing terribly well, or I'm playing with a group of people who would rather play farther up, fine, I'll do that. The only issue is sometimes playing from farther up tees, I tend to hit the ball plenty far, just not necessarily straight, and sometimes I've played courses from farther up and I end up driving through the ends of fairways and into trouble, whereas if I'd been playing farther back, I'd have been safe.
Well, so, yeah, it's the safest thing in the world to do is play from the back tees, and then you'll never reach the hazards that they put out there.
Or never clear them if you have to shoot over them.
Right.
Right, yeah.
It's
well,
an easy way to keep yourself out of trouble, but your scores are going to be reflected by it. I know, I always get into the same argument. I just don't understand why yardage is that important on which tee you play, because it could be a shorter course, and yet it's a very challenging short game course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And so it's got a rating or a slope of a 134, 135, 136, mm-hmm. which is not someplace I'm comfortable. I'll play there, but I know that I'm going to be shooting in the mid to upper 90s if I do. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for the high 120s, and then I'm comfortable, you know, and right. My ego doesn't go, no, we got to play. And I walked into a threesome. Hey, can I join you guys? Yeah, you want to be in our game? Just tell me what I owe at the end of the. I don't really. Sure, I'll be part of your game. Oh, we're playing teams. So here's how it works. I don't tell me how it works. Just let me know what I owe you at the end of the round.
Right.
If that's what you want to do. But these guys, they wanted to play from the back tees, and they shouldn't have been. But
right.
It was their ego that got there.
Exactly. And again, I know guys that, you know, they feel like they have to hit driver on every hole. And if they don't, they're getting ripped off somehow. And that's, you know, I think you got to get over that mindset, or else you're going to be losing a lot of balls and spending a lot of time looking for balls and, you know, laying balls out of hazards and so forth and so on.
Moving up to number 11 is another very bold statement suggestion that you're making to golf course operators.
Right. Well, this one was kind of a bit facetious, but kind of occurred to me that it's an interesting idea.
It would force people to play faster.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you charge by the hour. All right, so if you play a four-hour round, you know, maybe with this, you know, a margin of error of 20 minutes on either side or something, you pay the full price. If margin of error on the north side of 4 hours, you pay full price. If you play around 3 hours, you get a 25% discount. If you play in 5 hours, you get tacked on a little bit more to your amount you pay. I even joked about putting taxi meters on the carts and
yeah.
You happen to be driving and charge accordingly. Here, your cart's on. Good luck.
Well, but even taking that another step further, I don't always want to play for 4 hours. I don't have that kind of time, and I didn't want to just go hit bucket of balls that day. I would like to play 6 holes. I'd like to play 4 holes. I've got an hour and a half. Why not charge me by the hour? You can use GPS tagging. You know, between you get the guy's phone number, you have it on your thing, you know exactly where they're playing.
Yep.
What's wrong with just saying, what's it going to cost me to play for 2 hours?
Right, exactly. Or what am I? I've actually was just out in Reno, Tahoe, and there was a course out there, the name of which escapes me, unfortunately, that actually they've got some.
It's not good for a travel writer.
No, it's not. Well, we played about 8 courses in 4 days or nine courses in 4 days, and they kind of started blending together. But I think it was Eagle Valley, actually, in outside of Reno, that a municipal course that actually charged for on one of their courses you could do a 6-hole round, 3 or 6 or a 9-hole round, and they charged accordingly. And it was a way to get parents with kids to come out.
Good.
And, you know, you can come out, and if you're a senior citizen or if you're a parent with a kid, you could come out and, you know, just walk 3 or 6 holes, and that's all you paid for. And they encouraged that. Or 9 holes if you wanted to do that, or 12. And it was a you know, so you could come out and kind of adjust your play according to your schedule.
I love that's it.
Fantastic idea.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Well, and what about the idea, and as we started this conversation, while I'm still young is not going to help this, but are we trying to grow the game, or do we want to really make it an elitist sport the way it's viewed by those who don't play anyway?
Right, right. And those commercials are, I would love to get a group of people who don't golf together and have them watch those commercials and
do
see
a focus group
about
with that.
Yeah. And so what do you think about this? I mean, if they needed some explanation of what the point was supposed to be, just how does that make you feel about golf? Because every time I look at them, I create, and as much as I like the people in the commercials, I mean, Annika Sorenstam and Paula Creamer and Arnold Palmer. And I mean, geez, you couldn't get a nicer bunch of people, but gee, in those commercials, they're just kind of cringeworthy. All of them, performance-wise and essence-wise.
Well, it's a great article, and I'm going to, you know, like I said, I'm going to post it up on our blog, and I'm definitely going to follow you more often now, because I'd love to bring you back on the show and talk about buddy trips.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I'd enjoy that.
I have a group that I travel with every year, and it's interesting because one of them is based in Chicago, and two of us are here in the San Francisco area, and we got another guy in Seattle. And what ends up happening is we always travel around the early part of April because the guy from Chicago is going stir crazy and needs to get out. So he's got to get out of the snow. He's got to get out of the cold. And so we have to go like earlier in the year. So it seems to be that we're very limited on where we can go staying in the continental United States.
Right.
And so I would love to get your feedback on places to go for all kinds of buddy trips that are not only continental U.S., you know, but all over the world as well.
Sure.
And talk significantly about that and get some great ideas from you.
Sounds good. Be happy to do it.
Oh, that would be great. Well, thanks so much for your time and for the article. It was wonderful. And we will speak again soon.
My pleasure, Fred. Thank you.
Well, what's your thought? Do you have a suggestion that we missed on how you pick up the pace of play? Please share it with us on our Facebook page. It's the Golf Smarter Facebook page. The link for that page in Facebook is in the blog or on today's show notes. And I'd really, I honestly would like to hear what your ideas are. And let's start a conversation with everybody and see what we have to say. Up next, another one of our favorite teachers, Jeff Ritter, talks about his Making the Turn initiative and responds to a very compelling email I recently received from a Golf Smarter member who shares his frustration. After many, many years of working, studying, training, and practicing, no matter what he does, he can't seem to make improvements in his game. It's beautifully written and resonated so deeply with me. I felt that Jeff would be able to provide valuable insights. And as always, he comes through with flying colors. So that is coming up on the next episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Have you had a chance to check out the new design of our website? At the very least, let me issue an invitation to those of you with young children and grandchildren who we don't want to be rude to people. I've just created a new video that's on our homepage of a children's bedtime fable about breaking 80 for the first time. So far, my family's reacted well with it. They think I'm silly anyway. I really hope you enjoy it and enjoy it enough to pass it along to all your golf partners. It lives on both the public and the member site of the all-new golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.